அவசியம் பிரகிருதி சங்கம் ஒரே வாபாதே ததா நியச்சேதம் ஈசோபி போஸ்ய மோட்ச ததாதி. இந்த டாக்டர்னு ஒரு சாங்கியா இஸ் டேக்கன் அப் ஃபார் கன்சிடரேஷன் ஒன்ஸ் அகெயின் ஹியர், எஸ்பெஷலி இன் ரிகார்ட் டு இட்ஸ் கன்செப்ட் ஆஃப் மோட்சா ஆர் லிபரேஷன். The Sankhya doctrine holds that bondage is the union of Purusha with Prakriti, consciousness and matter, and freedom or moksha or liberation is the separation of consciousness from matter. The withdrawal of the Purusha consciousness from Prakriti. Here, Panditaji takes up this issue as to whether this is a feasible definition of moksha. Because freedom either is complete or it is worth nothing. A little freedom is more annoying than having no freedom at all. Complete freedom is called moksha liberation. How would you expect the Purusha consciousness to be absolutely free and be in a state of liberation when Prakriti is there contending with its own existence? The infinite Prakriti will stand opposed to the infinite Purusha always. Secondly, omniscience would be impossible unless the Purusha consciousness knows Prakriti also. If Prakriti is something that consciousness of Purusha does not know, there would be no omniscience, because there would be something which the Purusha does not know. But if Purusha knows Prakriti, it will come in contact with Prakriti once again, as it did earlier, so bondage will be there and no freedom. So the very definition of moksha, according to the Sankhya, is defective, because Prakriti will certainly restrain the Purusha as it did earlier and cause contact with Prakriti in order that it may be an object of its awareness. If Prakriti is known, it causes bondage. If it is not known, Purusha is not omniscient. So either way, there is a problem. And Ishvara, who is considered by the yoga doctrine as something transcendent, extra-cosmic, will also control the Purusha as he was controlling earlier, because unrelated objects are the sources of fear. If there is some relation, we can adjust ourselves harmoniously in terms of that relation. If there is no relation whatsoever, it is difficult to make out what sense is there between one thing and another thing. What kind of moksha is this then? Ose moksha tathagati avibheka kratah sango niyamascheti chetada baladapatito maya vada sankhya sudurmade. The Sankhya doctrine may retort by saying that the contact of Purusha with Prakriti a second time is not permissible, because it has already had an experience of the sufferings caused by such a contact. And actually, the contact itself is inexplicable, since two dissimilar entities cannot come in contact with each other. And the contact so-called between Purusha and Prakriti is only a matter of non-discrimination. And if this is accepted by the Sankhya, it is actually landing itself on the Maya doctrine of the Vedanta philosophy. Somehow or other, the universal Brahman cannot be avoided totally from any concept of philosophical doctrine, and Sankhya is refuted hereby. பந்தமோட்சவியவஸ்தார்த்தம் ஆத்மானாத்மா மேஷதாம் இது சென்ன யதோ மாயா வியவஸ்தாபயதும் சமா. For the sake of the freedom that one has to attain in order to reach moksha. The distinction between Atman and Anatman has to be entered into, because the multiplicity of the Purushas, as adumbrated by the Sankhya, stands as a great obstacle in knowing the true difference between Purusha and Prakriti, consciousness and matter. The distinction between the knower and the known is not very clear when consciousness comes in contact with matter. As the illustration of the Sankhya goes, when a red flower is brought very near in juxtaposition with a clear crystal, the crystal assumes that color of the flower, it becomes red in its nature. The whole crystal becomes red. Now, crystal can never become red, inasmuch as the redness that is perceived is only due to an apparent contact of the color of the flower brought near it. Apparent contact, really the flower has not entered into the crystal. In a similar manner, it is to be understood how bondage has taken place. Consciousness cannot enter the object because of the dissimilar characters between the two. Object is that which is not consciousness. If the object also is regarded as a phase of consciousness, that should not be regarded as an object anymore. The definition of consciousness is non-objectivity. And therefore, when we perceive an object and get attached to it, we should not be under the impression that you are beholding consciousness itself. Consciousness differentiates itself from everything that is external to it, and the objects are nothing but the externality of consciousness. Durghatam ghatayameti virudham kinna vashyati vastavo bandham okshavta shodharna sahadiram. This is again a refutation of the Sankhya doctrine. An impossible thing cannot be made possible. The coming in contact of Purusha with Prakriti is actually an impossible occurrence. Impossible because of the two being totally different in nature. One being pure subjective awareness, the other being pure objective unconsciousness. It is a contradiction. Don't you realize that in your attempt at making feasible what is otherwise impossible, in this attempt you are bringing about a contradiction? Viruddham kinna pashyati vastavau bandha mokshau tu. Actually speaking, even bondage and liberation are not to be regarded as spatio-temporal occurrences. Bondage is not a spatial or a temporal event. It is something above space and time. That is why the bound soul also becomes conscious of there being such a thing called space and time. Even moksha is not something that is achieved in the future. Moksha is liberation, attainment of eternity. Timelessness is eternity. As eternity cannot be a matter of the future, eternity has no past, present and future. And so the attainment of eternity, which is really moksha or liberation, cannot be a matter of tomorrow. It is an eternity just now, at this very moment, here and now. This has been confirmed by certain scriptures like the Karikas or the commentary written by Gaudapada Acharya on the Mandukya Upanishad, where is quoted a very important verse. न निरोधो न चोत्पत्तिर् न बद्धो न च साधकः न मोक्षो न वै मुक्तः इत्येषा परमार्थता. The ultimate reality being Brahman, all processes, whatever they be, applicable to this world of experience, generally be applied to Brahman. There is no dissolution of the cosmos ultimately, nor is there a creation of the universe. In the same way as the ropes we see indistinctly in twilight, looking like a snake, has really not become a snake. The snake is not created by the rope. There is no creation of the snake at any time, though it appears. So appearance of something can be possible even if it is really not there. Also, there is no withdrawal of the snake into the rope. That never took place. And therefore, withdrawal also is out of one. So is the nature of this world. It is not an actual manifestation in concrete substantial form. It is an appearance as subtle forces which constitute this cosmos in a large continuum of spacelessness and timelessness. May look like objects, like the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. Little atomic particles which are inwardly forces and continuous in their nature. Therefore, defying even the concept of space and time, become the causes of solid spatio-temporal objects like the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, basically originally, neither is there creation nor withdrawal of the universe. Therefore, nobody can be considered as ultimately bound and ultimately attempting for freedom from bondage also. Nobody aspires for moksha, and nobody is attaining also if it is understood in a spatio-temporal sense. Because moksha is not a movement in space, it is not also an occurrence in time. So when the thing is neither in space nor in time, where is it then? It cannot be regarded as anything comparable to that in the world conceivable to our mind. Originally, when we wake up from the state of dream, for instance, we will find the objects that we saw in dream never were created. They were never withdrawn out. The experiences caused in dream also did not actually take place. So they appear to be taking place very, very solidly. A very solid and real experience may actually not be there at all. This is what is happening in the creation finally. God alone is, and outside him nothing can be. Maya khyaya kamadhenoho vatsav jiveshwaravoho. If Maya can be regarded as a cow, Ishwara and Jiva are the products. Two babies born to this Maya Shakti. Because of the fact, Ishvara is a reflection of Brahman through the Sattva Guna of Prakriti. And Jiva is the very same Brahman reflected through Rajas and Tamas qualities of Prakriti. Prakriti is Maya. From the Vedantic point of view, so both Ishvara concept and Jiva concept are possible only when there is a reflection of Brahman consciousness through the qualities of Prakriti. That is why it is said Prakriti, which is Maya, is the mother, as it were, of these two babies that are born to it, Ishvara and Jiva. Yatyecham devatam dvaitam dattam dvaitam evai. Let these children, these cows, born to this cow, drink of the milk of duality as much as they can. Yet, non-duality reigns supreme. The very concept of duality implies a precedence of a consciousness that itself is not dual, but non-dual. Kutastha brahmanor bhedo nama matra adrati nahi. They have already mentioned earlier that the Kutastha consciousness or the deepest Atmanness and the Supreme Brahman are not separable in any way whatsoever, and the pot ether cannot be separated from the large ether. Khataakasha Mahagayo Yujyate Nahi Kujyate. Moksha will be the merging of the pot ether in the universal ether. But the pot ether never exists, and therefore neither its creation can be regarded as real, nor its merger can be regarded as an event that is taking place. In the same way as the creation of a pot ether or the merger of it in the universal ether cannot be regarded as events taking place, so is the nature of this world coming from Brahman, or the return of this world to Brahman. They appear to be going on as events in space and time. Really, no such event takes place. Because if events take place, God's unitary existence will be fine. Yadadvaitam srutam srishtehe prakadevadyajopari. That unitary being, absolute Brahman, which was there prior to the creation apparently, is now also in the same condition. After the creation, Brahman has not become something else. It is existing in the same eternal state, even after the apparent creation of the world, as it was prior to the act of creation. Even in state of moksha, it will remain the same eternity that it was. Mukta avata vritha maya pramayat akilan dhanam. Delusion, maya, karma or other, confuses the people and makes them run about hither and thither in search of things, as if they are the causes of the bondage or they are the sources of their liberation. Nothing of the kind is finally true, because we have to emphasize again and again that the existence of Brahman does not permit of the existence of any event taking place outside, nor can any event take place within it. Therefore, no event takes place anywhere. This is something like the modern theory of relativity coming to a staggering conclusion. Events do not take place in space or time. If they do not take place in space or time, where on earth are they taking place? They do not take place. A very great consoling truth for us. Ye vadanti tamedehi ram bhanti vidyatrakim. Even after you hear all these discourses on the great truth of Brahman, you will find that you are still in the same bondage of suffering. But the author says there is a difference. There is a difference between you people who have listened to this for a long time and the people who have never heard of it at all even once. Though you have also hunger and thirst and suffering and sorrow and anxiety and many other difficulties as other people also have, there is some strength in you which will stand you in good stead on account of the knowledge that has been impregnated into your mind and the deep contemplation that you have practiced on this truth for a long time, which will be of great utility to you even in the worst of suffering. So it does not mean that merely because there is an apparent suffering caused by body consciousness, the knowledge that we have acquired is useless. It will stand you in good stead one day or the other, because knowledge is different from ignorance. And the one who knows nothing about things certainly is not the same as the one who knows these things. Notwithstanding the fact, physically speaking, they look alike. ऐहि कामोत्सुकः सर्वः संसारो वास्तवतः न भाति नास्ति चाद्वैतमिति ज्ञानविनिश्चयः. Ignorant people do not even know that there is a world other than this world. And even if they are told there is something like that, they believe in the reality of an earth existence and the solid reality of a heavenly world. This samsara, this bondage, this suffering of life is considered as permanently valid by the ignorant people. Neither do they know what is above the world, nor do they have any idea of the non-dual character of the ultimate reality. This is the essence of ignorance, ajnana. But the jnanin or the knower is of a different character. He knows that this world, but also the other realms like heaven, etc., are degrees of reality apparently there, but really not there, for reasons already we have mentioned in the earlier verses. Jnaninaha viparidosman nishchaya samyagyuchade. Ultimately, nothing affects the jnani. If he gains something, it is all right for him. If he loses something, that is also all right for him. Because he feels that any material gain is not going to make a person really happy. And inasmuch as nothing that comes makes you happy, nothing that goes also can make you unhappy. So this is what the jnani really feels. Svasvadishtayato baddho muktoham jejimanyade. On account of a lack of clarity in understanding, one feels that he is bound, the other feels he is free. The freedom and the bondage of the soul are actually caused by the variety of thinking forces taking place in the mind. Mind thinking in terms of objects is what is bound. The mind thinking in terms of the soul consciousness, independent of the objects, is what is free. Nādvaitam aparoksam jenna jidrūpena bhāsanā. It may be held that this unitary consciousness that is non-dual is not visible to the eyes. Why not? The very nature of consciousness is of the character of non-duality. You cannot say non-duality is not visible. Your consciousness itself is a demonstration of this non-duality. Do you feel that you are two persons because you have got two hands or two ears or two legs? Do you feel that you are multiple complex individual because your body is made up of many, many little parts, fractions or cells? Do you not feel that you are one individual consciousness? When you go to deep sleep, all the associations of consciousness with the five sheaths are obliterated completely. Do you not feel at that time that there is one single bliss-like experience? You had a wholeness of feeling in the state of deep sleep. That wholeness is nothing but indivisibility. Indivisibility is nothing but non-duality of consciousness. So, the non-duality of consciousness is actually demonstrated before our very eyes every day in our day-to-day experience. Asheshedanabhatam jedvaitam jimbhatsegiram. Only thing is, it is not entirely clear to us. That is the case with the dual world also. If you see the dual world entirely with your eyes, the astronomical universe is so large that even the most powerful telescope cannot fathom it. But have you seen the entire dual world? If that is the case, why complain that the non-dual consciousness is partially felt only? It is partially felt because of the encumbrance of the karma potencies that are heaped up in the layer called the causal body, which obscures the consciousness in the state of deep sleep. But for that, you would have seen the entirety of the unitary consciousness. This is the reason why you have it experienced only in fraction and not in wholeness. Ting matrena vibhanam tvayorapi samam vastu karo dvaita siddhavata advaita siddhiste ravatanam. Fraction is the nature of our experience. Neither dual world nor the non-dual consciousness can be experienced by us completely. And therefore, they stand on equal footing. Whether it is a dual perception of the world of astronomy, or the non-dual perception of the consciousness. So there is no comparison of superior or inferior in respect of our awareness of the dual world or the non-dual consciousness. Both of them are known only in fraction or reasons already mentioned. Dvaitena hinam advaitam dvaita jnane katham vidam. Actually, we in our ignorance may imagine the non-duality is an abstraction. It is an absence of duality. This is not so. The origin of duality presupposes the existence of a non-dual consciousness. In order that you may know that two people are sitting, your consciousness should rise above the concept of these two people. Otherwise, your consciousness will be also divided into two persons. One will be this side and one will be the other side. How do you, in a single grasp of your awareness, know that two persons are sitting in front of you? As the one is totally different from the other, it is not possible for anyone to know that both are simultaneously sitting. The simultaneity of the awareness of two people sitting together or many things being there is because of there being consciousness in you which clubs them together. And the multiplicity of the world also can be seen in one stretch. In one stretch you can see the whole thing. Because your consciousness, which is Purusha Chaitanya, is basically Brahma Chaitanya. It pervades the entire cosmos. Unknowingly, it does the work of providing you with the knowledge of the totality of the world, though there are multifarious in their nature. Very difficult is this notion, and you have to go deep into the subject for understanding its true meaning. Dvaitena hinamadvaitam dvaitajnane katam dudam siddhanam dvavirodhya syadvaitasya to advaitasya tato asame ubhe. Dual consciousness is totally impossible. Because when two things are actually two, it is not possible to know that there are two things. The consciousness of two things is possible only if there is a consciousness which is not two. So if there are only dualities or multiplicities as the dualist content, there will be nobody to know that there are dualities exist at all. So even in your contention that dual world exists, or the many things in the world do exist, you are unwittingly accepting the existence of an awareness of all these dualities, you are falling into non-duality, whether you want it or not. Evam tarihi shrunadvaitam asan maya mayatvata tena vastavam advaitam vaisesha divasati. Now what is the conclusion, sir? After hearing all this, the non-dual consciousness is the ultimate reality. Brahman is the supreme truth. And it is in your own heart, scintillating, radiating as heart. Advaita, the non-dual character of consciousness is the final reality. And all that is dual hangs on it. Because the very knowledge of duality would be impossible without a transcendent consciousness which is not dual. Achindya rachana rupam mahayaiva sakalam jagat iti nischitya vastutvam advaite parisheshakam. Impossible it is for anyone to understand how this world is made. Any amount of intellectual jugglery, argumentation, scientific observation will not lead us anywhere. The mystery of the world remains always a mystery only. Having realized that there is a fantastic mystery that is operating behind this so-called apparent world, withdraw your consciousness from it and be not attached to it. May you be established in the consciousness of that unitary existence by disconnecting your consciousness from all that is contrary to it, knowing well that this wonderful world is a magical performance and its variety is no proof of its real existence. Punar dvaitasya vastutvam bhati cetvam tatha punah parishilaya ko vatra prayasatem devada. Even if you go on meditating on the unitariness of the Absolute, when you open the eyes, you will see many things in front of you. The dual consciousness cannot leave you, give you rest. Again and again you will see many things in the world causing love and hatred, a attraction, repulsion, etc., though you are meditating for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you will see the world is too much for you in spite of your meditation. Then what should be done? Your time for meditation should increase. If you are meditating only for 1 hour, increase it to 2 hours. If it is 2 hours, make it 3 hours, or 4 hours, or 5 hours. At least 5 hours of meditation is necessary. Ordinary people will find it difficult to find time like that, but attempt has to be made in bits of little process of meditation at least, again and again. You must habituate yourself to this contemplation on Sarvam Khalvidam Brahma. The All is the Absolute. And then gradually you will find the harassing duality consciousness will leave you one day or the other. Kiyantam Kalam. How long should I meditate? In the Brahma Sutra, a question of this kind is raised. You may go on meditating either till self-realization or till death, whichever is earlier. Why should you put a question like that? How long should I meditate? Has it been the job for which you are paid? You have to spend the whole life in meditation only. You have no other duty. So don't put a question, Kiyantam Kalam. How long? Did you ask the question, how long should I go on looking at the world? You are never tired of seeing the beauties and the distractions of life. Why did you not put the question, how long will I see them? And now when you are asked to meditate, you say, how long? As if it is something thrust upon you. Your duty is contemplation. The Atman is made of contemplation in substance. And action is not its essential nature. Action, work, bondage of any kind born of that is the character of the physical sheath, the subtle body, the causal body, etc. Atman by itself unattached, and therefore it works not. Its very existence is its activity. So go on meditating, and there is no use putting a question how long until you attain self-realization. Even if death snatches you off before self-realization takes place. Because in most cases, self-realization may not take place in one life. Death may overtake a person. It does not matter. This question was raised by Arjuna in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and Bhagavan Sri Krishna gave the answer, there is no loss of any good work. Even if you have meditated sincerely for 3 days only, it will be a great asset for you, which will be carried forward in your positive balance sheet of action in the next birth. Because of the continuous meditation that you have practiced in this life, in the next birth you will find it very easy. Have you not seen people in this world, little children also suddenly appearing very precocious, quickly understanding things? And many young boys, little girls, suddenly take to spiritual life without any kind of practice earlier in this world. What could be the reason? They have been practicing it in previous births. Great yogis who suddenly became masters in a few years after their birth can be explained only in terms of the great sadhana that they did in the previous life. So in the case with people who may not attain self-realization in this life, and so don't be afraid. There is no need for despondency, melancholy, etc. Let the meditation go on and be sure that your primary duty in life is this only. There is nothing else. Hari Om Tat Sat.